Let us get ready for puja. Huh? Today, I think we get Hui Rong, Anne, Song, and Jin Hao. 来，四个，来多两个。Papa Suri and Brother Tim, come. Six of you. Light the incense and the candle. 那有四个来的。One more, Anne. 来。啊，真好，走。啊，OK。还有一个那边，观世音的，Okay. Come, put back here. We'll start off by offering the tree. Come, let us stand. Sadhu, 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 sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, 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 sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, 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 sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, 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 sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu, pass the song. Sadhu, 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 sadhu.You all can offer the garland. Sadhu, sadhu. Need to raise it. Sadhu. Sadhu. Okay. Yeah. Sadhu. 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 Okay. Thank you. You all can be seated. You got one more. One more, girl. Hui Rong, come. You go to Guan Siying, go to the back of the speaker. Yeah. Yeah. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, good. You all can be seated, then we will start the puja chanting. Eh? Let us compose our mind. Eh? Develop the sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall pay our respect to all the great beings. Eh? Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Guan Siying Pusa. Namo Guan Siying Pusa. Namo Guan Siying Pusa. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Amita Fo. Namo Amita Fo. Namo Amita Fo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuto Bhagawa. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you can visit that. Then turn to page 1 of the chanting book. We will chant the Vandana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adina dana viranmani sikkhapada sakadiyami kamesu micacara viramani sikkhapadang samadiyami Musawada viramani sikkhapadang samadiyami Suramiraya majapanatana viramani sikkhapadang samadiyami Now we will chant the Padipa Puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapa ditena dipena tamadang sina tiloka dipang sambutang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambara yutena dupena hang sugang hina Pujaye pujaniyang thang Puja bhajana muttamang Vanna ganda gunupetang Etang kusuma santatin Pujayami muninjasa Siri pada sarorohe Pujemi butang kusumena nena Punnena metena ca hotu mokhang Pupang milayati yata idang me Kayo tata yati vinasabawang Adivase tuno bante Paniyang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang Adivase tuno bante Pale parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang Adivase tuno bante Bojana parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang Now we will chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity standing to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of pure clear water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the dana parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the born-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, May our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Tripa Jama. Padang Pujemi. Damang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay, you can be seated. Then there is a Jai Krishnamurti quote in front of you all. We will discuss this before we do the meditation so that you all can understand better. Hey, don't off the light yet. Because we have to discuss the Jai Krishnamurti quote first. Before you start your meditation. It's just a small sheet of paper. Those who don't have, you can collect from me in front. Anybody don't have? Everybody got, okay. The title is When Thought Has Understood Its Own Beginning. Okay, everybody got the Jai Krishnamurti quote? Okay, then we will start. When thought has understood its own beginning, that is the title. And this is a very important title. So Krishnamurti said, meditation is to be aware of every thought and every feeling. Do you see the similarity in his definition of meditation and Sakyamuni's teaching? What is Sakyamuni's teaching? Meditation. Mainly the four foundations of mindfulness. True or not? So, Noble Eightfold Path is in fact the full meditation. But within Noble Eightfold Path, there is this Samasati. Samasati or right mindfulness. And within that Samasati, the whole of the teaching is about the four foundations of mindfulness. And the four foundations of mindfulness covers mindfulness of the physical body, then mindfulness of the feeling, then mindfulness of the content of consciousness, which is Chittanupassana, then mindfulness of Dhamma. Where Krishnamurti summarize all of the kaya, vedana, sanya, kaya, vedana, citta, and dhamma into just thought and feeling. He separate feeling out. Well, feeling is a very important factor. Thought is all the five aggregate of form and mind. That's why within that thought you have the whole of the content, which includes the mental form, which includes the perception, the thought process, content of consciousness, your feeling, your emotion, your whatever content of consciousness, everything that your mind can do. So all this put in different words and maybe definition. But when you understand, it's the same. So the emphasis is mindfulness or awareness. So meditation is to be aware of every thought and every feeling. But he adds in this part, never to say it is right or wrong, but just to watch it and move with it. This is the daily mindfulness. This is what the Buddha meant. When you don't create duality, like and dislike, mental hindrance is not there. When you are just aware, it's like the four foundation of mindfulness. Aware means standing aware. Just aware. He never say not here, not there. Perceive this and do what? He never use the thought. He just say you aware. Everything you do, bending, stretching, turning, bowing, or looking in front, observing, everything just aware. That's it. So the whole of meditation is sati, mindfulness, awareness. When you are aware without thought, you don't stir your mind, you don't react, you don't create duality of like and dislike. The moment you stir your mind, it's from your conditioning, it's from your views and opinion of what you perceive. And the perception itself is an aggregate of mind. And when you perceive through memory, memory is where the problem is. Your memory has all of the good and bad, the accumulation of the past, whether pleasant or unpleasant. All of memory is never the truth, because it is of the past. And whatever that is of the past has got no significance. There is never the reality anymore, like what we understood. The past is already gone, no more a reality. So when you act according to memory, you will have problem, because you are not acting according to your understanding, your wisdom. So when you act according to memory, means what? Memory is your accumulation of all your life experiences, good and bad. Everything is inside there. And what do you accumulate most of the time? Yeah? What do you accumulate? Yeah? Your unhappy moment, is it? Your scars of memory, is it? Your fear, your phobia, your insecurity, your unhappiness. Of course, sometimes you try to recall your happy moments. And when you do that, what happens? You keep on referring to your memory. That's why you keep on thinking and get lost in thought and become heedless. That's the reason why Jay Krishnamurti understand the mind, the thought process very clearly. He said thought is respond to memory. When you accumulate as memory, it creates thoughts. That's why you can become heedless. It can make you attached, cling, grasp. And attachment, craving, clinging, grasping is the cause of suffering. That's why you understand why Mahayana say the second noble truth, which is the cause of suffering, is accumulation. Accumulation is the cause of suffering. That's the reason why a lot of people don't understand. They think Mahayana wrong. No. They actually understood. But there is a slight deviation from the Pali translation. Because the Four Noble Truths, according to the Pali translation, is very clear. Dukkha, Samudaya, Maga, and the last one is, and Nirodha and Maga. Maga is the path. So Dukkha is first noble truth of suffering, dukkha. Then samudaya, like paticca samudaya, dependent originating. So the origination of dukkha samudaya, the cause of suffering, is the second noble truth. But they go one step further, where they knew accumulation into memory is the cause of suffering. So when you accumulate, like I explained, your memory carry all those things that you accumulate. And what are they? Your fear, your phobia, your insecurity, your unhappy moment, your sorrow, lamentation, your views, your opinion, your conditioning. Of course, sometimes it's your attachment, your craving. All this will trigger all suffering. That's why acting according to memory is not acting at all. Because memory has this tendency. This tendency is very, very deep-rooted, related to your wrong views. When you have wrong view, you will condition the wrong thought. And wrong thoughts are thoughts that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, attachment, craving, clinging. Of course, your pleasant experience is also part of memory. And this is also craving, your like and dislike, your pleasant and unpleasant experiences or sensation that you arose while going through life. Then your phobia, your fear, your insecurity, all this is part of memory. Even your own greed, your selfishness, your envy, your jealousy, your fear born of delusion, all these are from memory. So acting according to memory means you are acting out of your own conditioning, your own fear, your own worry, your own anxiety, insecurity, your own craving, envy, jealousy. And even all those related to your egoic mind, you will cling, you will hold. And when you act according to all this, you are not acting at all. When you act according to your craving, your fear, your worry, anxiety, these are all evil roots, negative tendency. Even when you act according to your past memory of a pleasant experience that leads to craving, desire, and all those things, you are acting according to your evil roots. So this is not pure action. This is all wrong action. That's why acting according to memory is not acting at all. Then how should we act? Huh? You have to make decision in that. You have to live life in that. Then how do you act? You have to act according to Noble Eightfold Path. And what is Noble Eightfold Path? The meditation as taught by the Buddha. And Noble Eightfold Path is to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. That's why it can be summarized as Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Sila is the morality part. When you avoid all evil, you keep your Sila. Then when you train your mind to develop Sati and Samadhi, that is the Samadhi part. Then finally, Panya is wisdom part. So when you act according to Noble Eightfold Path, you act according to the advice of the Buddha, which is the meditation as taught by him. And this meditation, when you develop it, you will have wisdom. That's why you act according to your understanding. That's why you act according to your understanding, which is wisdom. You don't act according to memory, which is all of your conditioning, belief system, your negative tendency that you accumulate, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your phobia, your insecurity, your unhappiness, even your depression, everything you accumulate there. Then when you see something, hear something, or recall something, that fear, that phobia from memory straight away afflict you, condition you, and make you miserable. That's why accumulation is the cause of suffering. The arising of wrong thought is from memory. But when there is wisdom, there is understanding, born of meditation, then you don't act according to memory. Whatever you experience in life, upon contact, consciousness arises. But the input of that content is different, because now you already have understanding, wisdom. So you act according to wisdom, understanding, which is no more your greed, your delusion, your insecurity, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, no more. You act according to Noble Eightfold Path. You have right view to accept things as they are. Then you will arise the right thought, right speech, right action, and right way of living life. Then you constantly arise the four right effort to purify, then you constantly maintain mindfulness to train your mind to develop the spiritual faculty leading to samadhi. Then with sati and samadhi, you will develop wisdom, awaken. And this is how you act. So Krishnamurti, in his definition, teach you how to do this, how to develop the wisdom. So I read again, so that you understand. When meditation is to be aware of every thought and every feeling. Never to say it is right or wrong. Means no stirring of the mind. Just aware. There is no meditator, no analyzer, or somebody trying to analyze the meditation, whether you do it correct or not. Then there is no thought behind to create reaction of mind, stirring of mind, activity of mind. It's just silently aware. Never to say it is right or wrong means you maintain the awareness. You are not lost in thought. But just to watch it and move with it. What is move with it? Specific phenomenal awareness. You move with the phenomena. It can be physical phenomena under Kaya Nupassana, or nature's phenomena, or mental phenomena, which are your aggregates of mind, content of consciousness, and other things. Then in that watching, Krishnamurti say, you begin to understand the whole movement of thought and feeling. If you just silently aware, what will happen? What will happen? You will come to understand very clearly that how you become what you are, how you stir, how you react, how you become afflicted, how feeling condition your reaction. So the movement of thought and feeling, they always move together. When there is contact upon contact, what happens? Upon contact, the light bulb light up. So what is that? You become conscious, isn't it? So that consciousness, when it arrives, like seeing consciousness, the Buddha say what? In the seeing, it's only the seeing consciousness. No one to see yet. That's why there is no content. But the moment you input your content, what happens? The seven universal arise. The first one is what? Feeling. That's why upon contact, consciousness and its content go in. And within the content of consciousness, there is feeling. That's why feeling will condition what? Craving. Why? Because you don't have wisdom at the moment of sense experience. That's why craving will arise. And what is craving? Like and dislike. Pleasant and unpleasant, born of wrong view, memory, conditioning. This is your habitual tendency. That's how you get trapped. So in order to understand how you become what you are, you have to be silently aware and just mindful. Exactly like what the Buddha taught under Dhammanupassana to develop wisdom. The first category of practice is what? Dhammanupassana. Mindfulness of what? Dhamma. The five mental hindrance. That is the first category. So these five mental hindrance, what did the Buddha say? When there is mental hindrance of sensual desire, or ill will, or sloth and torpor, or restlessness of mind, or doubt, you must be what? Aware. He never asked you to think. Understand or not? And perceive and react, like and dislike, pleasant. That one will become mental hindrance. He just say aware. When there is essential desire, whatever sensual desire, maybe sensual desire, the five mental hindrance. The mental hindrance may be sensual desire or ill will or whatever. So is it when there is this mental hindrance? Take for example sensual desire. When sensual desire has arisen, you must be aware. And when you continue to be aware and don't do anything, what will happen? you will come to know how the it is one also you cannot remember. How are you going to cultivate Dhamma to Pasana? You will come to know how the arisen mental hindrance come to be is later, come to pass, understand? Because when it arises, you don't know how it arises, understand? So initially you are aware that it is there. But essentially desire is condition arising. If you continue to be aware, don't feed it with any more wrong thought, don't react, don't stir, it loses its power. Correct? Then what happened? It will cease to be. Then you will come to know, like the Buddha said, how the unarisen mental hindrance comes to be and how the arisen mental hindrance ceases to be. The first part, how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be, you have to be mindful all the time, like what Krishnamurti said. When you are mindful all the time, you realize the unarisen mental hindrance come to be is because of your views and opinion which is wrong that stir your mind. When you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactile feel something, your conditioned mind creates the stirring. That's why you have like and dislike. That's why never to say it's right or wrong, or like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. If you labor, you are not following what the Buddha teach, Dhammanupassana. You are using your thought, your habitual tendency. That's why you don't have continuous mindfulness to see your feeling and your content of consciousness, which is your thought process. You will never understand the true Dhamma. You will never have the ability to awaken. That's why mindfulness is the only way. That's the reason why in the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundation of mindfulness, the opening statement by the Buddha is Ekayano Bhikkhave Bhikkhu. O Bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the realization of Nibbana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. That's why everything is about mindfulness, no more thought process. So your mindfulness to be aware of your thought and feeling, which are your five aggregates of form and mind, is very important. And this one need to be very, very stable, continuous mindfulness. That's why meditation is to be aware of not only one thought or thoughts, every thought, and of every feeling. Means moment to moment, you must have that mindfulness. That's why you have to reach the stability of mindfulness that is so stable that your awareness can be with it. That's it. No word, nothing. Then never to say it is right or wrong. But just watch it and move with it. That's why specific phenomenal awareness. Just aware. Don't try to know. The silent mind, the meditative mind will awaken. And now we come to the next part. In that watching, you begin to understand the whole movement of thought and feeling, which means the dependent origination, Paticca-samuppada, the 12 link that the Buddha talked about. Then after that, out of that awareness comes what? Huh? What is that word? Read out loud. You better read that one out loud. If you meditate and cannot have the silent mind, you are not meditating. You are creating thought process. You are analyzing. You understand? You create the meditator. Who is the meditator? The thought. The thought is actively meditating. And how can you meditate? Because it will not lead to silence. Well, that thought is trying to know, trying to be aware, trying to analyze, am I doing it correctly? Is that what the Buddha say? Is that what Brother Theo say? That's why if you do that, you don't understand what is meditation. Meditation is just relax, aware, the four support. Aware is just silent. And it has to be a free mind. Samadhi is collectedness and the unwavering free mind. You look at the whiteboard. Last Tuesday, we went through. This one you have to remember. Huh? So samadhi has to be a free mind, collected and unwavering. So this free mind is very, very important. So out of that, the awareness comes silent. You know why silent can arise? Yeah? When you start to understand the universal characteristics, when you awaken to their characteristics of impermanent leading to suffering, empty nature or non-self nature, you are no longer deceived and deluded. That's why you can just relax, silent in a way. Of course, when your spiritual faculties are not there, it's very difficult for your mind to enter sati, to have that stability of samadhi. Without sati and samadhi, the silent mind cannot arise. That's why you have to train this mind before the spiritual faculty stabilizes. But when the spiritual faculty has stabilized through your puja, your bowing, and your whatever form of meditation, means the daily mindfulness and all those things, then meditation is automatic. You don't need method technique. You don't need to note anything. You just relax, silent, away. The mind will be in the silent state straight away. And that free mind that is silent, no focusing, no concentration, nothing. Even the object of meditation also gone. That's why I always remind you all when you meditate, if you still need the object of meditation, you must understand what object of meditation is all about. What are methods and techniques? They are just skillful means for you to anchor your mind, to train your mind, to stabilize the mindfulness. And that is not vipassana. That is not the meditation. That is just the training of the mind to be aware, because you don't have a stable spiritual faculty. Then you train it until it's so stable, until it enters samadhi. But the problem with people is they use thought. They go into one-pointedness where they find it very difficult to be aware, to be mindful. So what they do? They focus. They go and do jhana, the five jhanic factor. They apply the thought. Initial thought. That sustained thought. That's why vitaka vichara. Vitaka is applied thought. Then vichara is sustained thought. Sustain it. Focus. Keep on focusing. Then what happened? They will experience pity. Because when you don't allow the thought to move, it becomes very calm. But it's a conditioned state. Then pity will arise. Then you become very blissful, sukha. Then you fix the mind in one-pointedness. They call ekagata. That's why the energy build up. Then they push it up to form the jhana and all those things. And this is not sati. These are Hindu practices using the thought process. That's why the Buddha's teaching is different. You train your mind in anapanasati. And what is anapanasati? Mindfulness of the in and out breath. Everything is about mindfulness. Then you stabilize it. Means starting, you train breathing in, away, breathing out, away. Then breathing in long breath, away, breathing out long breath, away. Then when the breath becomes short, you away. Just away. Don't try to know anything. Just aware of that state. Then later on, when your sati stabilizes, you will experience piti. So breathing in, experiencing piti. Then breathing in, experiencing the various type of peace and all those things. You will be aware of them. Then you don't go into apana samadhi, absorption and all those things. After that, what is the next category of practice after anapanasati and the kayanupassana? You're supposed to be mindful of the four posture: standing away, walking away, sitting away, lying down away. Then the third one is mindfulness of all action and movement in the present moment, which is daily mindfulness. connecting all the four postures. And that is how you develop the initial wisdom. Then only you can continue with the rest of the four foundational mindfulness practices, leading to Vedana Nupassana, Citta, and Dhamma Nupassana. Then finally, accumulating to the awakening, which is mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths. So this is the whole teaching of the Buddha. And Krishnamurti put it in modern language so that you can understand. So out of this awareness comes silence. Then he warned you. He said, silence put together by thought is stagnation. You know why it's stagnation or not? Because you kill everything into one pointedness. The thought cannot move. That's why he called it stagnation. It's not a free mind. It's a conditioned state. And stagnation is like dead, understand or not? That's why you go to Zen temple, if you go into that type of jhana, they will whack you. They say, we have enough Buddha statue. What is a Buddha statue? No consciousness, understand? Like a dead man, understand? That's why he say, silence put together by thought is stagnation. Means you use the thought as the meditator doing one-pointedness. And stagnation is dead. But the silence that comes when thought has understood its own beginning, the nature of itself, understood how all thought is never free, but always old. This silence is meditation. You better understand this clearly. And this one I have to explain one by one. All the words are so powerful. The first one is, the silence that comes when thought has understood itself. Means what? How can your thought understand itself? You remember what I used to tell you? When thought realizes its own limitation, when thought realizes that it is impermanent, its universal characteristics is impermanent, leading to suffering, empty nature and non-self. Think also like that. Don't think also like that. Then what happened? Yeah? It was ceased by itself, understand or not? When the thought realizes its own delusion, limitation and creation, it will cease by itself. Because no meaning. Everything is not what you think. They are not real, not real. The unreality of all phenomena, the condition arising state, condition arising mind. So this universal characteristics of impermanent leading to suffering and non-self or empty nature is very powerful. The moment you understand you are free, then that silence can come. That's why Krishnamurti said, the silence that comes when thought has understood its own beginning. And what is thought? Respond to memory. Condition arising. Dependent originating. That's why no reality. Empty. Impermanent. That's how in the second part, the nature of itself means the characteristics of thought. The nature of itself means its nature is impermanent, dependent originating, condition arising. When you attach, cling and hold and give meaning, suffering arises. And because it's impermanent, it's not you, not a permanent unchanging entity where you can cling onto, hold onto, grasp onto and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, it can own things. All this can be mine. There is no such thing. That's why when you realize this too, then you will realize the next one. Understood how all thought is never free. You remember? When you use thought to meditate, you are within the field of thought. Within your own conditioned state, your own conditioned mind. You are chasing after your own shadow. That's why you cannot free. That's why you will come to understand how all thought is never free. Why? Because you are trying to realize the Dhamma, which is... What is the Dhamma? No, the Dhamma, you chant one. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo, the characteristics of Dhamma. The Dhamma is akaliko. What is akaliko? Timeless, beyond thought, beyond time. If you want to realize that state, how can you use thought? You understand? That's why you will understand how all thought is never free. Because it's still within the thought process, within the field of thought, within the conditioned world. You can never realize the timeless, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. That's why you will come to understand how all thought is never free. And what is thought? Respond to memory. And what is memory? Memory is your past experiences, your accumulated experiences. That's why he says it's always old. Understand? Krishnamurti used the word, it's always old. Never free and always old. And you still hold on to it. This silence is meditation. That's how you can awaken. And that is your true mind. Meditative mind. Silent mind. That is the mind that Huineng asks you to look for. That is the mind that has the three unique characteristics mentioned by Huineng. What are the three unique characteristics of Huineng's meditation? First, there must be no thought. Then, no mark of a self meditating. No mark of a being existing. No mark of life. No mark of the phenomenal world or Dhamma. If you cannot penetrate that, you cannot go the Bodhisattva way. That Diamond Sutta is very powerful. No thought, a lot of people trying to achieve. Most of them are through the conditioned state. It's not a free mind. But even when you can pass through the no thought, free mind, and realize the sainthood, you are still limited. You only know there is no self. And through that, you indirectly conclude that there is no being. But beyond that, your wisdom is limited. That's why you have to go the Bodhisattva way to realize the penetrative wisdom, the perfection of wisdom. Then only you can live that third characteristic, which is what? The mind must have no dwelling. It doesn't dwell anywhere. It's just aware. Move with it, flow with it. Aware. Perceive, aware. Then through understanding, it acts, finish. That's why action is spontaneous. Not through the thought process, not through memory. Not trying to calculate, understand? Not trying to do the analysis. That's why wherever there is, Krishnamurti used this word. He used a very good word, isn't it? What was the word he used earlier? He actually used a few words. I cannot recall them. One of them is measurement. When you try to measure, compare. Choice. Wherever there is choice. Thank you so much. This word is the one Krishnamurti used. Whenever there is choice, there is confusion. Do you know why you choose or not? You don't know why you choose. Because you're not sure, understand? You are doubtful. Like sometimes you have to decide, go or don't go. Understand? Means what? You're not sure. You have doubt. What must I do? Yeah? Especially when you are under dilemma. When you are in dilemma, you know what happened. What is dilemma? Both choices also don't. Not conducive for you one. You understand? It's like modakan. We have both choice also. It's dead one. So how are you going to choose? It's like, take for example, the doctor come out and tell the husband, you have to decide now. To save your wife or to save your child? That type of choice in agony. Understand? And why do people make choice? Because you refer to memory. Understand? You try to recall. Then through that memory, what do you do? You try to follow what people say, knowledge. Like that right or like that wrong? Like that benefit me or don't benefit me? So what is choice? Choice is about decision made out of your own selfishness and your own delusion. That's why you have to make a choice. But when there is wisdom, when there is understanding, you don't have to make a choice. You just spontaneously go ahead. Spontaneous means what? Not through the thinking process. You just act. You just act. It's just like when you are in the midst of a very critical situation, life and death. When you have the wisdom and the understanding, you just act. When you are very skillful, you just act. That's it. Finish. And when you act, that spontaneous action is born of your understanding. But if it's a conditioned action, according to memory, you sure got fear. Understand? That's why fear will arise. The spontaneous action, no fear. It just act. Sometimes in life, Krishnamurti used to give this analogy. When you are faced with life and death, do you think you got time to think or not? Yeah? Let's say a cobra, suddenly you walk past, you step on it or you confront it. The first thing that happened to people, you know, is what? That fear, that intense fear. Understand? And the body got a defense mechanism. Understand? Sometimes this intense fear trigger off adrenaline, understand? Hormone. Then make you very powerful. Understand? That's why those who have this adrenaline, spontaneously they just act. Like when they see their child threatened with something, accident or what. The mother can just go all out there without thinking of she herself getting harmed or what. Understand? That is spontaneous action. No more thinking about the self. It's just to save. Spontaneously you do. Because that is born of love and compassion for the kid, for the child. The mother's love. And it can do that because it's the mother. But those who have the Dhamma, they don't do things this way. This is called conditioned love. Understand? You know what is conditioned love? Love that comes about because of condition. Because that child is the mother's baby, then she can do. If other person, she's not affected. Understand? She's not even interested. That's why it's called a conditioned love. But universal love is different. Spontaneous one is different. Because when there is condition to act, it will act. It will just act and it will know what to do. And it will act within its understanding and capacity. That's why pure action is not through the brain. Not through your memory. Not through a calculative one. Not through a choice that you try to make. But when you act out of understanding, you know. It's just like right view with regards to law of karma. What did the Buddha teach? What did the Buddha teach? You have to take care of karma. Why? Because he said we are all born of our karma. Heir to our karma. Conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of karma. So we have to take care of karma. Otherwise, our life will become afflicted. Your karma will fall. Your karmic nature will fall. So, what must you do? You have to follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. Do good and purify the mind. And how do you avoid all evil? You have to understand what constitutes evil, true or not. Then you have the mindfulness to see the evil root. That's why this is acting according to wisdom. When there is something that arises, let's say you see something, then the natural tendency is that craving, that desire to have it. Then sometimes you want to steal it, misappropriate it. But when you have the mindfulness, you will be aware of your own selfishness, your own greed. Then you will not allow it to happen. You will not allow it to arise because that is wrong action. So the spontaneous Dhamma will come out like that day at the Thursday class. Ingbi, she described. You go back and listen to that sharing. Very good. She said, Vrithio, is it? This Yoniso Manasikara, which is wisdom at the moment of sense experience. Yoniso is wise attention at the moment of sense experience. Manasikara is attention. Yoniso is wise. So when there is this wisdom at the moment of sense experience, she realized that this wisdom will suddenly prompt up and tell her, and she will understand, and straight away the unwholesome thought ceases to be. He don't have to do anything. Then she realized, this is how you have the ability to prevent the arising of the wrong thought or unwholesome thought. But the moment you understand the Dhamma come out, it ceases to be. And this is what Yoniso Manasikara is all about. When you have contemplated, reflected, meditated, awakened to it, and this wisdom is with you, is always with you, then whenever you encounter anything in life, it will come out. Then it will prompt you straight away that wise attention at the moment of sense experience, which is Yoniso Manasikara. That's why I used to tell Yun Chan, you cannot learn. You cannot learn wisdom. Wisdom is whether you have or you don't have. The moment you have, you will know what to do. Then craving cannot arise. But if you don't have wisdom, you try to cut a feeling. You think after feeling it condition craving, then you can free your mind from craving. You go and try. Without wisdom, straight away upon contact, feeling, which is one of the content of consciousness, they will arise and straight away condition craving. You cannot stop. This is your wrong view, your habitual tendency, where you lack wisdom. You lack Yoniso Manasikara. Wisdom at the moment of sense experience. So, meditation is about all this. Daily mindfulness. Understanding the way of thought. The nature of thought. And understanding the limitation of thought. The whole of the thought process, which is the five aggregate of form and mind, which is consciousness and its content. So when thought has understood its own nature, its own beginning, then thought ceases. Then meditation becomes very simple. That silent awareness is always there because no more meaning. Think also like that, don't think also like that. Then through that silent, it will awaken. It will have penetrative awakening and understanding. That's how meditation is to be developed. Okay? Then we finish off the last part. The silence is meditation in which the meditator is entirely... What is the word? Who is the meditator? I know it's nobody, but usually the meditator is who? The thought itself. So if you are silent without thought, then that is the real meditation. That's why in which the meditator, which is the thought, is entirely absent. For the mind has emptied itself of the past. What is past? Memory. Understand? Your attachment, your craving, your wrong thought, your desire, your mental hindrance, all this, no more. That's how meditation is to be understood and developed. Okay? If you don't have any question, we can have 15 minutes of meditation. You can rejoice. Why so shy? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then later on, we can now off the light. We can have 15 minutes of meditation. Then after that, maybe we continue with the other one. meditation. Then we will proceed with our invitation, invocation to the devas. Turn to page 6. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities come here. Let them hear the good doctrine or teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samantha Chakavalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Itti peso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vijja Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditabo Vinohiti Supatipano Bhagavato Sakkasangho Ujjupatipano Bhagavato Sakkasangho Nyaya patipano bhagavato sakkasangho Samichi patipano bhagavato sakkasangho Yadidang chattari yokani ata purisa pugala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaneyo Anuttarang Punyaketang Lokasati Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Rupa Jaya. Buddhang Pujayami. Dhammang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay. You can be seated, then we will continue with our Dhamma discussion on the new book, The Buddha and His Teaching. Okay, turn to page Roman number 11. We stop at the page. Roman number 11. The common folk are attracted by the devotional side of Buddhism and its simpler ethics, while the intellect are fascinated by the deeper teaching and the mental discipline or culture. A casual visitor to a Buddhist country who enters a Buddhist temple for the first time might get the wrong impression that Buddhism is confined to rites and rituals and is a superstitious religion which countenance worship of images and a bodhi tree or tree. Buddhism, being tolerant, does not totally denounce such external forms of reverence as they are necessary for the public or masses. One can see with what devotion they perform such religious ceremonies. Their faith is increased thereby. Buddhists kneel before the image and pay their respect to what those image represents. Understanding Buddhists reflect on the great virtue of the Buddha. They seek not worldly or spiritual favor from the image. The Bodhi tree, on the other hand, is a symbol of enlightenment, where is the tree that Sakyamuni Buddha set underneath before his enlightenment. Yeah. What the Buddha expects from his adherents are not this form of obeisance, but the actual observance of his teaching. As the Buddha said, he who practices my teaching best reveals me most, is the advice of the Buddha. I think the actual saying is, he who sees my Dhamma or teaching sees me. Because the Buddha is the embodiment of his teaching, his wisdom and his virtue. An understanding Buddhist can cultivate or practice the Dhamma without external form of homage. To follow the Noble Eightfold Path, neither temple nor images are absolutely necessary. So this is the author's way of expressing it. He said, you can do away with the rituals, the bowing and all those things, if you just want to focus on the cultivation and the practice. But all this so-called bowing and ritual that Buddhists do, they were originally introduced during the Buddha's time with a different meaning and different understanding. That's why over the years it has lost its relevance and understanding behind. Devotional practice or puja, which we do nowadays, still actually follow the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha's advice, provided we understand what we are doing. That's the reason why every time I advise Dhamma friends, you must meditate with understanding, you must cultivate with understanding. Means whatever you do in the name of meditation or puja, you must understand what you do. And the rational behind means the true purpose and intent as taught by the Buddha. So all this so-called puja or devotional practice can be pre or post puja. They are of great benefits. I have explained them before. We just go through it as a revision because some of you are new. So before any Buddhist ceremony or spiritual activity, you will come together. Then you will pay your respect. Then we will start the puja offering. Then we will rejoice with our understanding of all the significance of the puja offerings. Then later on, we will start the puja chanting. Then we will take refuge. We will renew our precepts. All this has its great meaning. It is fundamental for us to understand that the purpose of devotional practice and puja is for us to recall to mind all the important teaching that the Buddha has taught us, so that we can develop the faith, the sadha, spiritual faculty of sadha, or faith in the Buddha and his teaching. And through understanding who the Buddha is, how special a being he is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. And his teaching can bring about enlightenment in the here and the now, can free the mind from all suffering. So because of that, your faith will be very strong. Your respect and gratitude towards him is very strong. Then knowing how great this teaching is, you will determine to cultivate it, to develop the understanding of it. That's how the second spiritual faculty of virya, or spiritual zeal, comes about. The spiritual tenacity to walk this way, to learn this teaching. Then after that, you pay respect mindfully. You make offering mindfully. All the puja activity you do with mindfulness. That's how the third spiritual faculty comes about. Then through the faith, sadha, virya, sati, you stabilize your mindfulness. Developing samadhi, the fourth spiritual faculty. Then with sati and samadhi, and the other spiritual faculty, it will lead to wisdom, which is the last spiritual faculty. When the five spiritual faculties are in order, they will allow you to understand spiritual teaching. That's why puja is very important. Then it will develop the merits, like what we did. We invoke the power of merits towards the end, closing puja. Then in the opening puja, we will make our aspiration for progress in meditation based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Then when you take refuge, you cultivate affinity with the triple gem. When you renew your precepts, you keep them. These are meritorious actions. Then all the other 10 meritorious actions, keeping your precept, then developing wholesomeness, rejoicing, listening to Dhamma, straightening your view, paying respect, offering service to help out. And all these are very, very meritorious. Then later on, towards the end, we share merit, transfer merits. And we make the various aspirations for progress along the path of Dhamma. So all these are the various understanding that you must develop, so that you understand what you are doing, so that all these so-called devotional practice or puja offerings, they have its meaning and its place. It has great impact on your understanding and cultivation. So this is the part, the text never express it out. But through our own practice, we understand that these are important. So not only you develop the practice, you also have to have faith to develop the spiritual faculty through all these devotional practices. Then we continue, the last paragraph. It is correct to say that Buddhism is absolutely otherworldly, although Buddhism perceive a series of past and future lives and an indefinite number of habitable planes of existence. Turn to the next page. The object of the Buddha's mission was to deliver beings from suffering by eradicating its cause, and to teach a way to put an end to both birth and death, if one wished to do so. Incidentally, however, the Buddha has expounded discourses which tends to worldly progress. Both material and spiritual progress are essential for the development of a nation. One should not be separate from the other, nor should materialistic progress be achieved by sacrificing spiritual progress, as is to be witnessed today among materialistic-minded nations in the world. It is the duty of respective governments and philanthropic bodies to cater for the material development of the people and provide congenial conditions, while religions like Buddhism in particular cater for the moral advancement to make people ideal citizen, or better citizen. Buddhism goes counter to most religion in striking the middle way and in making its teaching homocentric, in contradistinction to theocentric creeds. As such, Buddhism is introvert and is concerned with the individual emancipation. The Dhamma has to be realized by oneself, sanditiko. So this is the view of the author. So to him, he said, Buddhism differ from other religion because it don't have the belief in God, theocentric creeds and all those things. It teach homocentric, means homo sapien, just ordinary living beings, or human beings. Then he said, this Dhamma has to be realized by oneself. And because of that statement, he said, Buddhist is introvert and is concerned with individual emancipation. What is your understanding of his statement? Do you fully agree with what he said? Yeah? Buddhism is introvert. And is only concerned about self-emancipation. What do you think? What do you think? Because this book is meant to be a discussion topic. So you have to express your view. What do you think? No, yes, very good. That's why I say it's his opinion. It's only introvert. When you don't have the clear understanding. Because this teaching is very unique, like I used to explain to you all. This teaching has nothing to do with your own self alone. Of course, the main emphasis is about self-knowledge. But the Dhamma is a universal teaching. Universal teaching in the sense, when you understand this Buddha Dhamma, you not only understand yourself, you understand the world and beyond. You understand the whole of existence, both the conditioned and the unconditioned. It's like you understand the secret of life and you know how to live life. And when you know yourself clearly, you know others clearly. And when you know the law that governs life and existence, you know what this universe is all about. You know what the whole existence is all about. Then Buddhism goes further beyond that. That's why I said it explained to you not only the mundane, but also the supramundane, the whole of life and existence, and how you can transcend life, and how you can realize the unconditioned, the eternal life, and all those things. So, like Mimi said, Buddhism is not introvert. It's not only about self-emancipation. In fact, Buddhism understands that there is no self, there is no me striving or self-cultivating or living being to be saved. The deep penetrative understanding of the Buddha Dhamma is to go beyond the self. So all this, when you understand, you will understand better. So whatever that is written in the textbook, when you read with understanding, you will respect them for what they are. They write based on their understanding. That's why I said, this is the author's opinion. So this is good sharing. You got anything else to add? You can just raise your hand. Otherwise, we move on. As a rule, the expected ultimate goal of the majority of mankind is either nihilism or eternalism. Materialistic belief in complete annihilation after death. So this is philosophy. He said all those who live in the materialistic world, they believe in nihilism. You know what is nihilism? How many of you don't understand? What is nihilism? You don't understand. Nihilism is like you believe there is nothing more after death. After you die, that's it, finish. He believed in nihilism. Means no more. Then the other one is eternalism. It's like certain religion, they believe after you die, if you are a believer, you will go to the kingdom of God, have eternal life. Then according to some religion, the goal is to be achieved in an afterlife, in eternal union, either with the Almighty Being or an inexplicable force, which in other words is one form of eternalism. So these are the two common beliefs, nihilism and eternalism. Buddhism advocates the middle path, according to the author. Its goal is neither nihilism, for there is nothing permanent to annihilate, nor eternalism, for there is no permanent soul to eternalize. The Buddha's goal can be achieved in this life itself. But he didn't explain what is the Buddha's goal. The Buddha's goal is to realize enlightenment, which the Buddha called it Nibbana. When you can realize Nibbana, you will realize the unconditioned. Then you will have the wisdom to break free from birth and death, no more rebirth. And that is the teaching. Then we go to the next paragraph. What happened to the arahant after death? This one, he assumed you know what is an arahant. Okay. How many of you don't understand what the arahant is? Most of us understand. What about the new people who just came in? You heard of this word, arahant? Oh, you know. Oh, what is an arahant? Who is an arahant? Oh, never mind. We got the mic here. Come, pass it to you. You try. You just try. Don't worry. Then I will explain. Push it out. Push it out.
Yes. I've heard of the term before.
Yes.
But it's I don't really fully understand what it is.
Okay. Then I will explain to you. You see, according to the Buddha, he said as a normal human being, when we are born, if you develop the cultivation, the practice, and you do it correctly, you can realize enlightenment. Enlightenment is a very unique word. To the Buddha, enlightenment is not about psychic ability and all those things. Enlightenment is the realization of wisdom or understanding that can liberate your mind to a certain extent. So according to the Buddha, all living beings, not only human beings, even the non-humans, the animals, the hell beings and all those things, we are bound to this samsara, or they call it the wheel of life, the world of birth and death. We call it samsara, the existential world. These 10 fetters, they are fetters that bind you. When you meditate and realize the first stage of sainthood, which they call sotapan or sotapana, then you would have severed the first 3 fetters. The first 3 fetters are self-delusion, sakkayaditti, then belief in rites and ritual. The third one is you don't have faith in the Triple Gem, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. So when you have the understanding of the teaching and you break these 3 fetters, you become a saint or enlightened being, the first stage. Then as you cultivate further, then you start to develop further understanding, then you can attenuate or reduce your desire, your sensual desire, means desire of your senses, you can attenuate it. Then the fifth factor is you can also attenuate or reduce the anger, the hatred, the envy, the jealousy, or they call the fetters of ill will. Then you become a Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood. Then after that, you completely eradicate sensual desire and ill will, the root, the evil roots. You realize Anagami shape, third stage of sainthood. But when you reduce further, the 5 last fetters, means 6 to 10, when you can root out all the 10 fetters, you become an arahant. An arahant is very special, because an arahant being no more deluded, no more ignorant, you don't have to come back to undergo birth and death. You can realize Nibbana, the unconditioned, and cease to be. Yeah. That's what an arahant is all about. So the last 5 fetters are attachment to the form jhana. That is the 6 fetters. Then 7 fetters is attachment to the formless jhana. Then you have the 8 fetters, which is minor conceit or mana minor conceit. Then the 9th one is the restlessness of mind. The anagami still have. Of course, the last one, the 10th fetter, is ignorance itself, avijja. So this is the meaning of arahant. Eh? Okay, then we continue. Yeah. That's the reason why the question in the text says, what happened to the arahant after death? What do you think happened to the arahant after death? What happened to the arahant after that? Yeah? This is a very good question, isn't it? Let's say one day you all realize arahantship. What happened to you after that? Yeah? Cease to be, very good, okay. One of it is Mimi says cease to be. Because initially, you think you are a? You are a what? You are a human being, isn't it? So what is a human being? 5 aggregate of form and mind. So you think this is real, isn't it? So I just draw simple. Huh? A human being. Huh? 5 aggregate of form and mind. So before you become enlightened, you think this is you. But after you become enlightened, you realize this is not you. So what happened to this form and mind after you become an arahant? Yeah? Cease to be means what? You have to be more clear than that. Cease to be is a very simple sentence. Eh? What cease? Of course, it's the form and mind. But then, how did it happen? Yeah, that one is all the description. But we have to investigate through our understanding. Of course, it's very difficult for most of you because you haven't even gone through those stages and you don't even know what it is. We only speculate based on what we understand from the teaching. But the actual happening is, this five aggregate of form and mind, according to the Buddha, is dependent originating, anasana, condition arising. The reason why he says it's not you is because this one is karmically conditional. You say you are born into this world, but who gave birth to you? You say your parent, anasana. Scientifically, it's correct. Isn't it? Without parent, how can you come? But then, the Buddha went a step deeper. He said, without karma, this one cannot come. Even your parent also don't exist. Your parent also have a set of five aggregate of form and mind, also karmically conditional. You only need their physical support. Means, when they have this, you call sperm and ovum, when they mate, then this sperm and ovum, if there is condition for mating, then it will give rise to their embryo. Means it will develop and subdivide. Means you conceive, you become the mother, become pregnant. Then this, what they call sperm and ovum that mate and conceive, they will start the process of subdivision of all the cells until don't know how many weeks only the sense basis comes in. Then later on, the consciousness come in. That's why the first pulse of life, the heartbeat, that's why the mother will have both the embryo's heartbeat and the mother's heartbeat. So this one that formulate inside the womb comes about not only because of the sperm and the ovum. The Buddha said there must be this life force. Life force, which is the karmic force that pump the heart and give the heartbeat. And there must be a being that take birth. Yeah. Otherwise, the condition is not there. Then it cannot come about. So when the baby is born, that five aggregate of form and mind slowly, slowly grew into a human being. Then this human being meditate and realize the wisdom. When they realize the wisdom, what happened? This five real forms still have karmic force. That's why in the text, in the scripture, is described. Arahant is the five aggregate of form and mind remaining. Means, some they call it with residue. Because the residue karmic force is still there, understand that? Means it hasn't died. So when that arahant realizes nibbana, is nibbana with residue. You understand? Means the karmic force is still there. It's not pari nibbana. They don't cease. They don't end. But they can realize the cessation inside. Means the form and mind completely no activity. The consciousness also cease. All the aggregate of mind also, the mind, the mundane mind that realizes itself and sees, goes through a complete transformation. From a conditioned state, it realizes the unconditioned. That's why the Buddha said, if there is no such thing as the unconditioned, then escape from the conditioned world or conditioned existence is impossible. But it because there exists the unconditioned, which is Nibbana, escape from the conditioned world becomes possible. That's how Nibbana can be realized. Then when it's connected to the wisdom, and this wisdom is through your cultivation. This wisdom, the moment you realize, it's always with the form and mind. It won't disappear. You don't have to remember. You don't have to commit to memory. That's why this form and mind, after this wisdom come in, you can say it's an enlightened being. Or, if it reached the fourth stage, it's an arahant. And this arahant, which you call arahant, which is a five aggregate of form and mind, is not you. Because this one is dependent originating, condition arising. But because it is connected to this wisdom is connected. That's why this five aggregate of form and mind become arahant. And because of this wisdom, there is no more ignorance. Upon death, the last thought moment, which conditions rebirth consciousness, cease to be. It doesn't condition rebirth consciousness. The mind realizes itself and cease. Realize Nibbana. That's it. And when it realizes Nibbana, when the karmic force is still there, it can come back. It can become conscious again. That's what an arahant with residue is. But when it's time to parinibbana, means the life force ceases already, then when it goes into that cessation, there is no more coming back. That's why they call that parinibbana. Yeah. You understand? Then what ceases? Of course, people say the five aggregate ceases. But what is the five aggregate? It's the form and mind, this mundane mind. Because there is no more life force, there is no more conditioning through ignorance, the rebirth consciousness cannot continue. That's why that stream ceases. It's just like a candle. You blow off the light. You cannot ask the question, where did the light go to? You understand? It's just like asking, where did this rebirth consciousness go to? Or the so-called human form and mind, the mind go to? You cannot. It's just like the light, because it's condition arising. The light continue to light up because they are supporting condition. The wax are still there, the wick is still there. Then there is oxygen for it to burn. Any of this condition gone, this light will go. The human being is the same. You have the physical body in working condition. You have the consciousness that is trapped inside. Yeah? Still. Active, alive. Then you have the life force that come. These three are the supporting condition that maintain this five-year form of mind or human being. Animate it. Continue to make it alive. Any of the three conditions gone, this form of mind will die. Like life force no more. Means heartbeat stop. Doesn't pump anymore. So what happened? Brain dead. The consciousness cannot stay inside because nothing to support it, you will leave. Separation of form and mind is what you call death. Actually, there is nobody inside there, nothing died, it's just condition dispersed. Then sometimes the life force still there, the consciousness still there, but the physical body get destroyed. The vital organ get destroyed. Consciousness cannot stay inside because it cannot support it anymore. Then it has to leave. When it leaves, the life force cannot pump the heart. Especially heart attack. The heart stop. The heart stop. Life force cannot come. The five real form in mind disperse. So the question about what happened to the arahant after he died? Or where did the arahant go? Yeah. So this is the question the author tried to from. So we read on, see what he say. What happens to the arahant after death? This is a subtle question and difficult question to be answered, as Nibbana is a supramundane state that cannot be expressed by word and is beyond space and time. Strictly speaking, there exists a Nibbana, but no person to attain Nibbana. That's why the word attain Nibbana is wrong. Nibbana cannot be attained. It can be realized through a cessation process. The Buddha says it's not right to state that an arahant does not exist after death. Okay. If, for instance, a fire burns and is extinguished, one cannot say that it went to any of the four directions. When no more fuel is added, it ceases to burn. The Buddha cites this illustration of fire and add that the question is wrongly put. One may be confused, but it is not surprising. Here is the appropriate illustration by a modern scientist. This Robert Oppenheimer writes, if we ask, for instance, whether the position of the electron remains the same, we must say no. If we ask whether the electron's position changes with time, we must say no. If we ask whether the electron is at rest, we must say no. If we ask whether it is in action, we must say no. So this one is very abstract. Huh? The Buddha has given such answer when interrogated as to the condition of a man's self after death. But they are not familiar answers from the tradition of the 17th and 18th century science. Evidently, the learned writer is referring to the state of an arahant after death. What is the use of attaining such a state? Why should we negate existence? Should we not affirm existence, for life is full of joy? These are not unexpected questions. They are the typical questions of people who either desire to enjoy life or to work for humanity, facing responsibility and undergoing suffering. To the former, a Buddhist would say, you may if you like, but be not a slave to worldly pleasure, which is fleeting and illusionary. Whether you like it or not, you will have to reap what you sow. To the latter, a Buddhist might say, by all means, work for the will of humanity and seek pleasure in altruistic service. Buddhism offers the real goal of Nibbana to those who need it and is not forced on anyone. Come and see. Come and see means come and investigate. Ehi Pasiko advised the Buddha. Till the ultimate goal is achieved, a Buddhist is expected to lead a noble and useful life. Buddhism possesses an excellent code of moral practice, suitable to both advanced and unadvanced type of individual. They are the five precepts: not to kill, not to steal, not to commit adultery, not to lie, and not to partake in intoxicants and drugs. Then the four sublime states of Brahma Vihara, which is loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy or appreciative joy, and equanimity. The 10 transcendental virtue or parameters of generosity, morality, renunciation, wisdom, spiritual zeal or energy, patience, truthfulness, resolution or adhittana, loving kindness and equanimity, then the Noble Eightfold Path. Right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi, not concentration. Those who aspire to attain arahantship at the earliest possible opportunity may contemplate on the exaltation given to Rahula by the Buddha himself. This body is not mine. This am I not. This is not my soul. Then the one in Pali, It should be humbly stated that this book is not intended for scholar, but student who wish to understand the life of the Buddha and his fundamental teaching. The original edition of this book appeared in 1942. The second or revised edition or enlarged edition with many additions and modifications was published in Saigon in 1964 with voluntary contribution from the author's devout Vietnamese supporters. In the present one, the author said, I have added two more chapters and an appendix with some important sutras. It gives me pleasure to state that a Vietnamese translation of this book by Mr. Pang Kim Khan of Sunanda in Pali was also published in Saigon. In preparing this volume, I have made use of the translation of the Pali text and several works written by Buddhists and non-Buddhists. At times, I may have merely echoed their authentic views and even used their appropriate wordings. Wherever possible, I've acknowledged the source. I'm extremely grateful to the late V.F. Gunaratna, who amidst his multifarious duty as a public trustee of Ceylon, very carefully revised and edited the whole manuscript with utmost precision and great faith. Though on an onerous task, it was a labor of love to him, since he was an ideal practicing Buddhist, well versed in the Buddha Dhamma. Many thanks are due to generous devotee for their voluntary contribution, especially to Mrs. Coralia Labroya, very difficult to pronounce, and Miss Ranjatni Konitilika for correcting the proofs, and also to the Associated Newspaper of Ceylon Limited for printing the book with great care by the author Narada. So this book, the latest edition was 14 July 1980. So we have completed the introduction. Okay, 10 more minutes. You all got any question or not? Or anything to add before we go into the actual teaching? I think we will reserve next Tuesday for the actual teaching. Anybody got anything to share or any question on this topic? Pass the mic to Mimi. Let Mimi share. Yeah. Thank you. While I have a drink.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Okay, what I'm going to share is, this morning, I wake up very early, about 6 o'clock, and I went to off the light, and when I walk over to my rupa, which is Manjushri, and I have this very strong urge of actually paying respect to Manjushri, Bodhisattva wisdom.
Sadhu.
So when I pay respect to the Rupang, I really have this full of gratitude towards the Bodhisattva's nature. Then when I went over to Kuan Yin, because all my Rupangs is played in different places, went over to Kuan Yin and also pay respect and also mirror for.
Our good friend.
Then the last thing is, The sense tell me that you should pay respect to Lord Shakyamuni Buddha.
Yeah.
So I went there. Very strange. I didn't actually bow down.
Oh, okay.
I was standing there, gazing at his rupang, and I pay respect to him. When I was in my very silent mind, paying respect and having a lot of gratitude towards his nature and also the Ten Direction Buddhas, then suddenly I have this very profound understanding. It was very long, actually.
Oh, sorry.
So after all the sharing, the understanding I have, I quickly go to my desk and I write down. So I have to refer to the book. Actually, I cannot remember.
Never mind. Take your time.
I have to quickly sit down on my desk and
write it down.
Because I really cannot remember.
Yeah.
I think this is very good because I understand that a lot of kayamitas that we have just taken the bodhisattvas while and aspiring to walk the bodhisattva way. So I think this is a rough structure of, I hope it can really enlighten you or benefit you in some way.
Yeah.
So I just read from what I have written. So having a clear comprehension of your mental state, perceptions and feeling at all times, it is utmost essential, because with this, the more and more clear how you actually function in this form and mind you call yourself, this is very important. This is called, I name it myself, knowledge of real self-knowing. That's point one. Number two, having stabilized the above, the very refined delusions, defilements, and ignorance that harbor within this nature will reveal itself to you using pure awareness. This awareness is very important for the cultivator, because this awareness will recognize its fault and you will make a decision to make a change, making effort to change through strengthening your views, opinion, etc.
Sadhu.
So the third part is, the above can only happen only with very, very stable sati, appamada. How can we have this stable sati? Then I put formal meditation. Either you can use vipassana and samatha. And when you have done this, you have to en route to daily mindfulness, sati sambhajana. Here, in the midst of perfecting through the above, the journey of self-knowing, this cultivation can actively engage himself or herself, engage her nature or his nature in further developing all the Buddha bodhicitta qualities. In the Mahayana, you have 6 paramitas, and in the Theravadian, you have 10 paramitas. 6 paramitas are generosity, morality, patience, meditation, wisdom, and perseverance. This is the real journey of Bodhisattva path, by perfecting the bodhicitta. That's why there are many suttas talking about how we can actually perfect our bodhicitta. So if you aspire to walk the bodhisattva path, you have to really know from the mundane and the supramundane way of how to perfect your bodhicitta. Besides going through the above, the cultivator should by now have the following understanding, realization and awakening. If he wants to go further, he has to really realize what Brother Teo said just now. No thought, no mark. There are 4 types of no mark. I don't dwell deeper into it. No dwelling and non-duality. So, you see, for he really wants to walk the bodhisattva path from the mundane to the supramundane way, he has to have this realization, understanding conceptually, realizations and awakening. He has to go through this process. And of course, the last, non-duality is one of the highest. Then the next one is through meditative experience of returning to the source. This one I put bracket 7 element of universe. This one is in the Surangama Sutta. Understanding why emptiness is truly wonderful existence. If a person have gone through the realization and awakening, he will have a true understanding of what this phrase really means. Then, while these things was, I have this understanding, then suddenly, I remember the phrase in the Vimalakirti Sutta. in the chapter of Buddha Land, because they, I mean, the,
yeah.
my nature did highlight when I was in front of the Buddha. This chapter talks about Sariputta asked Buddha, when I look at this world, this samsaric world, I see this world is full of hollows, thorny, underscrub, sand, gravels, filth and defilements. So he asked the Buddha, why you say this Buddha land is pure? This is in the Vimalakirti Sutta.
Yeah.
Then Buddha say, because your mind have high and low and does not rest on Buddha wisdom. So once the cultivator has realized the above realization and awakening, the sutta say, bodhisattvas will treat all things and beings, each one of them, with perfect equality. His deep searching mind is pure, and because it rests on the Buddha wisdom, it can see purity in this Buddha land. This one, this phrase is not written by me because it's, I take from the Vimalakirti Sutta. This is what Buddha is trying to say. Once you have realized the no thought, no mark, no dwelling, non-duality, and you have the meditative experience of returning to the source, you can be in this nature. So then this is my words, eh?
Yeah.
The way of bodhisattvas. In this human life form that I have taken, the conditions arise in whatever situation. The nature that have realized the higher Dharma, such as non-duality and the profound sunyata, emptiness, they will know how to perform their bodhisattva's duties towards all sentient beings. Because you don't have an eye, you have understand the unreality of all phenomena, so you can perform this duty.
Yeah.
In performing the duties, their mind, there is no good or bad, as all phenomena are empty nature. Sentient beings are what they are, is due to delusions and ignorance in their nature. But their intrinsic nature are pure, waiting to be awakened. In sunyata, emptiness sense, why bodhisattvas can do their duties? Because that nature has fully understood and awakened to the empty natures of all phenomena. From emptiness, all phenomena arise. And from all phenomena, it all returns to emptiness. So, I call this the way of the bodhisattvas.
Yeah. Okay,
so good. I hope with this, maybe Brother Teo can give some comments.
No problem. Sadhu. Let's rejoice. Sadhu. Okay, I will just quickly summarize. We are just now, I heard my wife's alarm, 10:30. So we exceeded a bit of time. So if you can do this, it's very good. Like what Mimi has done. Whenever something inspires you, or when you have some form of condition to write what you have realized or what you have understood down in words clearly. What she has written is she has done it for quite a while. But all this, it will become more and more refined later on. But it's a good practice. It's a good start. If you can start to do this, your understanding will deepen. Because, like I said, there are three phases of Dhamma. Phase one is pariyati, learning of the teaching. Then patipati, putting into practice. Then phase three is pativeda, the fruition of it, the realization. So when you have the fruition of it, you must reflect, contemplate, stabilize it, then try to write it down. Otherwise, that friction is not stable. That's why you have the path and friction. Path means you are on the path, but your understanding haven't stabilized. That's why it has not become the fruit. Understand that? For it to become the fruit, you must stabilize this understanding. That's why you must reflect, contemplate, write it down. When you can express them, your understanding has stabilized. So we will continue on this later, because it's already past 10:30. So we will maybe stop for today, 5 minutes plus 10:30. So I will continue with the topic, remind me next Tuesday. Then next Tuesday will be interesting, because we are going into the what they call the teaching of the Buddhas and the life history of the Buddha, the proper one. Yeah. Then there will be a lot more very favorable discussion topic where you can talk about. Just now, even in the introduction, we don't have enough time, that's why I didn't go into it. You remember they asked the question? What is the meaning of life, purpose of life? Every religion has its different purpose and intent. Some is to realize God, to be with the kingdom of God, to have reunion with their teacher or great being and all those things. But Buddhism got nothing. They say Buddhism just realize Nibbana exists. So, why do you want to go for the teaching and realize that state and become nothing and nobody? Yeah, that is what people think, you know. Do you understand? But they don't really understand Buddhism. They don't really understand the Buddha Dhamma, the Buddha's teaching. I will explain on this. Remind me next Tuesday. It is such a wonderful teaching. I explained a little bit earlier on. It's not about running away from life. Cease yourself. It's no more. Then they say life is beautiful, wonderful. Why are you running away from life? Why do you want to realize this state of Nibbana and no more? People want to come back. So all these are the contradictory thinking of the human world, the materialistic world. But when you truly understand the Buddha Dhamma, you will come to know this teaching encompasses everything. The real cessation which the Arahant realized, maybe to a certain extent, is true. What they say is true, because you realize Arahantship sees no more in there. But those who know the whole way, the teaching, go the Bodhisattva way, then existence is different. True emptiness is wonderful existence, really exists. And meaning of life, everything is there. But when it comes to Arahantship, it's because people who has gone through life suffering, they know whatever good life or pleasurable feeling that arise is always a prelude to suffering. Life is full of dukkha, because this is a noble truth. Before you become enlightened, you will attach, you will cling. Through ignorance, through delusion, you will get yourself entangled. So when they see enough of suffering, they just want to put an end to birth and death. That's why they strive hard to realize Nibbana. But the striving will prevent them from realizing. But the one that finally realize, they don't strive. They come to realize the secret of life, that the form and mind is not them, like the Buddha finally realized. He left the palace in search of truth. It's because he saw the four signs. He saw old age, sickness and death and a samana. So he said he has a problem. He cannot clear old age, sickness and death. But when he realized this is not him, no one born, no one sick, no one die, then he realized he don't have a problem anymore. That's why life become beautiful. Existence become beautiful. He got no more suffering. So, old age, sickness and death is no more an issue. And that is what the teaching is all about. It's not running away from life and cease. No more. Okay? We will share merits. Starting with the devas. Akasata cha bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anamoditwa cirang rakantu loka sasana itta watta chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabde deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo ibina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Sakyamuni Buddha and all the worthy ones.
Thank you.